Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It's Nerds Podcast number 517, bonus episode this week. You guys, well, we had a lot of people.
We're giving too many episodes out.
That asked if they could go up this week. And
listeners,
so I said, you know what?
Be
fine.
Like, what's going on? Why
I know.
Are so many episodes?
We're throwing it off. So many episodes. Four episodes this week. So you're welcome, and I'm sorry if that's too much. Before we get to that, I'm doing stand-up in Salt Lake at West Valley City, Utah, in the middle of the month.
But you're flying into Salt Lake City.
I'm flying into Salt Lake City. Yeah, May, I don't know, 16th, 17th maybe, somewhere around there. Go to Nerdist.com/calendar, the new Nerdist.com.
Oh, it is a gorgeous website.
It is.
I'm
and
so
it's,
glad
it's
it launched
mobile now.
Zero problems.
Super great. Well, there, you know, listen, there's always maybe a little bug when you're shifting over. And maybe that happened. I'm sorry, okay? You know, we're doing our best over here, Matt. Come on, man. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron.
What? Blue Apron?
Yeah.
Chris, I know the folks at Blue Apron.
I know. When Katie said Blue Apron's a sponsor for this podcast, you were like, what? They have my credit card.
Yep, they sure do.
So why don't you tell folks what Blue Apron is?
Here's what Blue Apron is. Maybe you like to cook, guys. Maybe you're into that. You like cooking, Jonah?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Okay. What you don't probably like is shopping, right, guys? Maybe you go out, you forget the parsley. It's in the recipe. You forgot the parsley. Maybe you forget the butter. Maybe you don't have butter lying around. Maybe there's a seasoning you don't have. Well, guess what?
So
Blue Apron.
Are you telling me that Blue Apron will just send you the recipe and all the ingredients and then you get
all
to cook?
All the exact ingredients you need. If it requires olive oil, it doesn't rely on you to have olive oil in your house.
Because a lot of times with food services, if you have food delivery services, you get them and the food's been made for hours.
Yeah, who wants that? That's not fresh.
And also, some people, it's very therapeutic to cook.
Oh,
so
great.
It's healthy food. You're going to eat better, cook more, shop less with Blue Apron. It's $9.99 a meal, which is way cheaper than going out to get
food. Yeah, it is. $9.99 a meal for two people. You can do it three times a week, have it delivered. These three meals come to your house
ready like
to
royalty. Be royalty.
It is great.
That sounds great.
And it's
skirt
a subscription
steak
service.
On the menu this week, guys.
No commitment to the subscription service. You can skip a week. You can cancel any time with a week's notice, and that's it. And Nerds Podcast listeners get an exclusive offer, two free meals on their first delivery by going to blueapron.com/nerdist.
So that's $20 off right there.
Yeah.
I mean,
Matt Myra has used this service and loves it.
I can't believe that we're just giving this stuff away now. What is this? How did I not know they were sponsoring this?
We'll get you a
I'll just use the promo code.
This episode is Acker and Blacker.
Oh, we had so much fun.
They're funny. They're
when
funny.
They
kids.
Were on the James Bonding podcast. Go ahead and take
they're
a look at
James.
That. It's on the Nerdist Network.
Nerdist Network, James Bonding podcast, one of a couple podcasts done by Matthew Myra, Phoebe. They've been doing more of those episodes lately, too. The New York show of Thrilling Adventure Hour is May 10th. They have an insane cast list for that one, which we cover in the,
oh, God,
in the show.
Oh, God, it's going to be crazy.
In
David Letterman's going to be
he's
in
not
it.
Gonna be, it's not going to be David Letterman.
Stephen Colbert is going to be in it.
Stephen Colbert's not
in
it either.
John Stewart's
going to
be in it.
John Stewart's definitely not going to be
there. All these New York-based guys you want
they
to
couldn't
see.
Even get Chris Hardwick to be there. See, because I'm here. I would do it if I were in New York.
Well, I feel like they wouldn't have asked you because that's what they do.
Tickets are available on Ticketmaster.com. And here's episode number 517 with Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, the Bens. Ben Acker.
No, it's not the Bens. The Bens was Ben Queller,
Ben
Folds, and
Ben
Lee.
Ben Lee, yeah, I know.
This is Acker and Blacker. It's very
After
different.
All, in the end, just pretend.
We can't clear that.
That was a parody cover.
After balls.
No, now it's
in
parody.
In the end.
Is that what you think parody is? Is that what you think Weird Al does? He just turns things into balls?
No, he turns things into food. I turn things into balls. I'm the Weird Al of balls.
You see that College Humor video? In the cantina set?
Yes. The one that we built.
Yeah.
Yeah, we built that
pretty
for
good.
Our thing last time.
Yeah.
Last year.
Theirs did a lot better than ours.
College Humor.
Shit ton better than ours did.
College Humor's got...
They got Weird Al in it.
Well, besides that, they also have like 9 million subscribers.
Lisa Loeb, you ever heard of her? She's in it.
Yes, Matt, you're I've probably, heard of Lisa Loeb. You're aware of this.
Been inside of her, too. That's pretty
well,
cool.
Let's
What number podcast are we introing right now?
517.
517. Akron Blacker. Have a good time.
Oh, my.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Ben Blacker brought cookies.
Put them away.
He had to miss the first time we were supposed to record this, so he brought apology cookies, which were not necessary.
Always necessary.
No, it was very...
There would have just been regular cookies.
Now, what is the difference between a regular cookie and an apology cookie?
Taste it and see.
I don't know.
Salty, salty tears.
Oh, okay, tears.
Yeah.
I tears, right?
Christopher.
What? Benjamin. That could theoretically be both of you.
I'm waiting to be introduced.
Oh, Ben Acker.
Hi. Hi, podcast.
You don't have to wait to be introduced. You can just start
podcast
talking.
Etiquette.
What?
Isn't it?
No.
You wait till they say your name and then you start.
No, that's radio etiquette. This is just podcasting.
Sorry.
We were actually already having a conversation before the podcast started. So
should we start again?
Oh, sure.
There was a lot of trash talking in that. We
joining
not start
me
again.
On today's casting of the pods is writers Benjamin Agger and
Hi.
Benjamin Blacker.
Thank you. Yes. I always put that pod will be cast. Like when I record one, I say and I tweet about it, I say this pod will be cast next week. And I always wonder if that's a weird thing or if that's actually how an okay way to say it.
No.
It sounds very Gandalfian. This pod shall be cast. That feels like you need a staff, like you would have a transmission.
Oh, that's
staff.
How I tweet.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's how I used to announce it too. The pod has cast.
Yeah.
The day has turned. Like it just feels more respectful to everyone.
Exactly.
I think.
Alea iacta est. The Latin that Caesar said when he was crossing the Rubicon, meaning the die is cast.
What is going on?
Sorry.
Great Caesar's ghost is calling you. Put that down.
He just threw it on the floor.
Your
listeners will buy me a new iPhone.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if you send them apology cookies.
Oh, they'll get them.
You'll
each
totally get
and
a
every
new
listener.
iPhone. I had a good time at WonderCon. That was a fun... How was,
that was great.
What other thrilling adventure stuff did you guys do at WonderCon?
We just went and did a little signing at the Nerdist booth, which was really fun. People picked up the graphic novel, the Thrilling Adventure Hour graphic novel, which
nice.
We were excited to get in front of people.
I moderated my first panel.
What did you moderate?
I moderated a spotlight panel, which I think is like a prom or something, for Kelly Sue DeConnick, the wonderfully talented comic book writer.
And how did it go?
So good. Her views and opinions are well documented, so we just hung out for an hour. Talked about the latest Wes Anderson movie.
Okay, good, good, good.
We came up with an idea for, I don't know if it's an app or a website, but like Andersonify yourself, like your home, your apartment. Like if you want a more periwinkle couch
sure.
to go with your lab or wall,
yeah.
like there should be a website that provides it.
So you can actually get the perfect periwinkle.
Home.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Thank you.
What would be the soundtrack to that website? Because obviously a website.
60s Britpop.
Yeah, The Who, David Bowie. Yeah.
And then Mark Mothersbaugh for the moving in montage.
Is it or is it just a bunch of like 20-year-old girls playing a ukulele?
I'm going to get your mind, man.
Just like it's almost like it's borderline 20s.
Yeah,
sounding
exactly.
it's very twee.
Remember when the 20s came back in the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
It's that.
It's that again. This is the 60s coming back, but from the 20s coming back through the 60s.
The Depression
all wearing
invasion.
Matching outfits.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's perfect. I think it's perfect. And I think it would do surprisingly better than most people would guess.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a lot of people want to make twee their apartments. So what are some other ways to tweeify an apartment?
I feel like there are those clocks, and maybe this is just very Grand Budapest Hotel, but those clocks made of oak that are like heavily varnished with very thin hands.
Mm-hmm. Like a cuckoo clock too, or just the...
Oh, cuckoo clock,
oh,
obviously.
Cuckoo clock, yeah.
Yeah.
That's twee as hell for clocks.
Now, when did...
Welcome to the clock cast.
Oh, have you seen my twee as fuck t-shirt?
Yeah. But it has to be in like a weird brush script.
It's font. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's yeah. It's somewhere between cursive and calligraphy.
Yeah, somewhere in there. That it almost looks like elven writing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of a horse.
But the mistake. They keep the mistake in. Show that it was hand done.
Yeah. It has to. And you can only get it on Etsy. I always felt like
or on the Etsy side of town.
Yeah, somewhere over there.
It's east side.
It used to be really run down, but then they came in and fixed it up. It's a bunch of old factories. Yeah, that they turned into
now macrame.
Yeah, it's yarn 2600s.
A lot of yarn stores. Tons of yarn stores, as far as you could see.
Atari 2600 had that wood aesthetic, right?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit across the top of the console.
Was the back or was it plastic?
I think the back was plastic. I think it was just there was a panel on where the
Paul F. Tompkins has a wood backing one on the one he keeps in his waistcoat.
Loves
pocket.
Wood. He loves wood because he's got the wooden iPhone. He's got the wooden iPhone case. Let's see what other. Okay, so yarn. We can yarn bomb things.
Well, record albums.
Yes, obviously. Record albums would be very.
Hold on, yarn bomb. Let's not move past that.
What? I think we all know what that means.
Yarn bombing. Yeah.
For hipster Halloween.
Yes, that's where a bunch of hipsters with young prank. Girls with granny glasses. when you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning, and then like a light post or a parking meter in your neighborhood is now covered in yarn.
And they can be like, I like that light post before it was yarn.
Yeah, exactly. Then they can hipsterize then they can be hipster about the thing that they made afterwards.
I liked it before I got to it.
I got to it before I thought it was ruined cool it. Before I thought it was cool. Yeah, they basically just create yarn around something. But in a very professional way. Like it doesn't look shitty or sloppy. It's a good job.
Mm-hmm.
People yarn bomb bikes, they yarn bomb all sorts of things.
Anderson, your town.
Yeah, you could totally
West Anderson, your town.
Yeah, absolutely. So okay, so we got yarn bombing. Is there a preferred food and beverage of the
craft beers.
Craft beers, yeah, of course. Yeah,
local. Like
homebrewing,
also artisanal honeycomb stuff. That's the topping.
Made from your own apiary, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's all about the bees, people. Look into it.
I birth each and every bee myself. I go out there to see it.
Yeah, they think I'm a queen, and I'm cool with that.
Hey, we're all queens. You know what I mean? We're all queens.
No, but just one 2014.
Of those... Okay.
Bee suits made of yarn.
Yep. We're going to make yarn bees. I think that's Absolutely. The most twee as fuck thing as alt is to make yarn bees. Hashtag twee as fuck. Yarn bees. We yarn bombed all these bees.
Keep the hashtag going, everyone.
We yarn bombed this bee, this honeycomb. That's great. Okay, I like this a lot. It very much... Have you spent any time in Portland?
Yes.
So if you go to Mississippi Avenue, like that side of...
Yes.
Which is a great area
of town. It's
been
yarn bombed.
But you could yarn bomb that whole side of town, and I think people would be like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Little hipsterly.
Yeah, this totally fits. This totally fits. Would you consider yourself twee?
I wish.
No?
No. I'm real profound and stuff, so. Like, it's just not shallow enough, man. But I love and I'm a sucker for la la la, so like my tastes run twee.
La 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 la.
Yeah, not the Danny Elfman shit.
No.
La 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 la.
Not scary la la.
La 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 la.
Then you can drop down like a half a step.
La 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 la. Most of your musical tastes were influenced by the Batman theme.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize.
I'm a Nelson Riddle fan.
Sure.
Adam West Batman is kind of twee, right? Because that's sort of 60s.
Oh, sure. Those colors are Wes Anderson.
Super.
Palette.
Yeah, super. Kapow, bam. Mm-hmm. Putting kapow or bam like in that comic book font on your wall, is that twee or is that...
Is it Lichtensteinian instead of Andersonian?
It might be too Lichtensteinian to be twee as fuck.
Oh, man. I'm very excited about twee as fuck as a concept.
Yeah, handwrite your letters.
But
get those wax envelope sealers.
Yeah, wax envelope sealers, right with a quill.
Put them on the analog internet.
Put it on there.
Which is bulletin boards at your coffee shop.
Carrier pigeon them over. Give them to John Hodgman to give to us.
Anything?
Draw a picture of your own mustache if you had one.
Who first told me about Thrilling Adventure? I might have been Paul F. Tompkins. Back when you had just started doing them at M-Bar. The M-Bar was the first incarnation of Thrilling Adventure, right? And this must have been 10 years ago, almost.
Almost.
Yeah, we've been doing it 9 years. So, and we started an M-Bar in 2005.
And he said, you absolutely have to do this Thrilling Adventure Hour. It's like a serialized sci-fi radio play. But it wasn't until you guys started doing it at Largo that I actually did it. But what a fucking unbelievable... I mean, to write a show that solid... month after month after month after month after month. Did Thrilling end up? I'm like, is it still pretty close to where it started, or did you make?
First of all, thank you.
Of course.
It's well, when we did a run for 5 years at M-Bar, and then when we moved to Largo, we had the chance to reboot and start from episode one again because those were the ones that would be podcast, and so we had the chance to look at what we'd written for those 5 years and. Be 5 years better of writers at it. So, like, there were core concept and world-building stuff that stayed. But then figuring out we didn't have to put every idea we had into every episode, making them about one story, was really a way to figure out that we had leveled up.
Were the initial episodes, was it one massive story, or was it always three stories? Was it always three?
The format was always, three segments in every hour-long-ish show. That hasn't changed. We used to have a much headier, like, framing device thing, and then we did a thing for a while where we played with radio tropes. But that all kind of fell by the wayside as we realized, like, we don't really need that. People get it. They know they're coming to see a show.
Yeah, we would start it with, like, hosts saying, you're about to see a radio show. And a little more Muppet Show in that the people, the actors playing versions of themselves, introducing segments and that kind of bits around that. And now it's much more, here's what the show is. We don't have to tell you it.
And all the performers showing up in somewhat not old-timey, but just...
respectful.
Dapper.
Suits.
Like, kind of dress for prom.
Twee as fuck.
Twee as fuck.
It's Thrilling Adventure Hour, twee as fuck.
Shit, yeah.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, there's some twee motherfuckers in Thrilling Adventure Hour.
It's because people show... the audience shows up. A lot of them show up very well dressed, too. It's a real... By the time you had, 5 years to workshop at M-Bar, and then it got to Largo, it felt like there was a pretty... rabid community of thrilling adventurers that would, no matter what, just immediately sell out the show because they were just part of this community. Are there people who have been in since the beginning that you see that still come to the shows month in, month out?
There are a handful who have kind of been along for the ride who don't come every month because we priced them out when we moved to Largo.
Yeah.
But who certainly are still invested and, like, will keep up with the podcast and come to shows when they can. And that's
we had to rebuild a little when we moved to Largo, because the price went up a bunch of times. And and then B, because we were doing those stories that some of them had already seen. So it was a matter of finding the new, make new friends and keep the old.
Yeah. And that kind of, like, we got two big bumps after making the move to Largo, which was now 4 years ago. Yeah, I know. It does not feel like 4 years ago. Yeah. And the first one was when Nathan Fillion first did our show, which was
when you first did our show, I think.
Was that the first time I did
you and Cardellini and Fillion and Foley?
That was a Christmas show in 2000.
No, June.
Oh, it was June?
Yeah. No, you did a very early one.
You played the waterfowl.
I played the waterfowl.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And having that guest cast, like, it was you and Nathan, and he tweeted about it beforehand, and there was a line around the block because a lot of those people stayed for the show. And then when we started podcasting and went on Nerdist Network, people found it. Like, we knew the Nerdist audience would like our show.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Yeah.
And some of the guys.
That was a good call, Chris. Thank you.
Well, coods, Chris. Coods.
It seems like if you're making a radio play, that it would be good for a medium that's very similar to radio. I mean, it is. There are things that you get only if you go to the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't
face acting. We call
there's
it.
There's face acting, but it's that's just a layer.
Yeah.
You don't need it. I mean, it's nice to have it, but. But the jokes and the performances completely stand on their own. I mean, I think Thrilling is one of the most beautifully written pieces of comedy, But then on top of that, then you have Padgett Brewster and Paul F. Tompkins and Mark Gagliardi and Annie Savage and
it's all amazing the, core cast.
Yeah, it's an incredible cast, and Hal and it's a great group.
Thank you.
We love doing this show in large part because of that group. Yeah. Like it's what makes it continues to make it fun for us. Like, one, either what can we do to them this month, or two, what can we make them do this month? Like, what do we get to see them do?
Do you guys have any? Do you have any involvement in Night Vale, or is that not? There's nothing to do.
We're just supporters.
Because there's a lot of cast crossover.
Yes, they've poached a lot of our cast. No, we're big Night Vale fans. I mean, I feel like when it comes to staged radio plays, there's us and there's them.
Yeah.
And we're thrilled to be working with them. We're doing a crossover with them at San Diego this year.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Should we ask him on microphone?
Oh, yeah, let's put him on the spot.
Let's do it.
Do you want to... Hey, Chris.
Yeah, Ben, what's up?
Are you busy? What's the date?
July 26th, the Saturday night of San Diego Comic-Con.
Are you super busy at Comic-Con times?
For
like an hour or two or whatever.
Do you want to like swing by the Spreckles Theater and maybe like be in a show?
Oh, Spreckles, Spreckles is on the, like on the, in the harbor, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
It's above water.
You're just going to ask me to do an underwater show?
If it was a sub-aquatic theater, that would be... Super
the Submariners above all the radio play.
That would be twee as fuck.
Oh, that would be super twee as fuck.
Submarines are twee, motherfuckers.
Oh my god. Should we do a what was my the waterfowl? I could be the waterfowl, like sure. Under the water.
That's for our next Kickstarter.
Yeah, okay.
An evening with the waterfowl.
What time is...
Underwater.
I believe it's at 8 p.m.
I've taken some time away from my evil doings to perform some of my jazz standard favorites. Here's some of my faves.
Try the penne. It's divine.
Oh my god, I would watch that so hard.
Witchcraft, wicked birdcraft. But he just puts a bird into everything, and it's just to make
like
it
it's a tick almost. Can't help it.
My sweet embraceable UEWE. It's a bird. It's another bird reference.
I like it.
Oh no, that's not a bird. That's I meant emu.
Emu.
My sweet embraceable emu. Still works.
We'll clean that up in post.
That's the water sheep.
Katie, clean that.
Make a note.
Water sheep down.
Will you please write a Captain Laserbeam episode? Thank you. Yeah. You're making all of the correct puns.
He just really nodded. He nodded super hard.
Yeah, so your show's at 8, because I think we're doing... I know we're definitely doing a podcast at the Balboa...
Right.
But I think it's a 10 o'clock. It'd probably be a 10 o'clock show. And we're in talks to figure out if we can do an at midnight. So
what time would that be?
It would actually not be at midnight. it would either be an 8 or a 10 o'clock show. It would not be 11:59, 59 seconds. So the answer
is... He said it live.
The answer is...
Wipe.
I would be... The answer is I would be honored to do that if I'm not doing a show at the same time, then of course.
Yes,
that would
be awesome. We'll try to figure it out.
That'd be
cool.
Fucking fantastic. Do you know? Oh my god. The Tweeverse is going to shit their fucking they're going to shit their britches because they wear britches.
Absolutely.
They're going to
hand-stitched.
Yeah, all hand-stitched britches. That they monogrammed themselves.
Unfortunate occasion for the monogram.
I am the monogrammist.
The monogram is a good Captain Laser.
It really is.
Who put this CL on my shirt?
What a clue.
It's the monogrammist. But then you find out, like, he's not really... He doesn't really do anything that's bad.
Right, just...
I mean, the idea being that you have the villain construct, but nothing he's doing is really that bad. He's just... doing stuff.
What was the episode
we tried to do?
The
episode was
like
with the Dibrarian.
That's right.
The Dibrarian was stealing...
that was so much fun.
Was so up to no good in his mind. Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
And it was... he was...
I think we did that at San Diego last year.
Buying remaindered books and giving them to schools.
And he thought it was so devious.
Oh, man. I'm going to trick children into reading and liking to read so that they'll spend their lives appreciating books.
That's fantastic. So did Captain Laserbeam stop him?
No, Captain Laserbeam was like, had to go with it and pretend like, yeah, that's real bad. And yeah, don't keep doing it, please.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to stop you.
Have mercy on our souls. I guess I'll go.
I don't know how many... I must have... I don't know how many thrillings I've done. It must have been... I've done a bunch, yeah. But a handful.
Well, you're really good at it.
No,
real busy.
I would love to do it more, but yeah, but it's I'm always... Yeah, it's always a scheduling thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much fun to do.
Yeah, I don't know how you do all of the things that you do. Like, Ben and I are writing full-time on a TV show and then thrilling and comics and stuff, and we have no time for anything else. You do all of the things.
Well, I don't know, but I feel like writing is one of those jobs that if you're writing something, that's not something you can do for a half. Like you can't really do that for a half hour at a time. Like my schedule is very modular in that, you know, we put together the script for At Midnight, and then we do it, and then I do a podcast, and then we do a rehearsal, and then we shoot the show, and then I can do another podcast or go do stand up. Yeah. It's if I were staffed on a show. I mean, that's like I would need that 8 hours a day just focused on that one thing. I think because just the way that you and this sort of gets us into your podcast, Nurse Writers Panel, which also was also another. I mean, I love watching. I've been to the podcast before, and people show up with notebooks and they take notes. Like it's a masterclass in writing.
Yeah, but that's why I did it, because it didn't exist and I wanted it to.
In connection with A26LA, which is a great organization to show kids that they can be writers.
Yeah, absolutely. It fosters creativity.
Yeah.
All the proceeds from Nerdist Writers Panel go to A26LA.
So what have you learned about the writing process just from... Because I assume that you're probably like I am, where when you have guests on, it's not just because like, oh, I'm just going to entertain people. Like, I got to figure out how this works.
That's
I need
great
to learn
for me,
because
like the stuff that we're struggling with is the stuff that he gets to ask us.
And then you just sort of sneakily, how do you break through the...
It's not sneaky.
What if your writing partner's name rhymes with yours? What if you won't shut up about it? What do you do?
Is
that your Ben Blacker?
Yeah. It's totally accurate.
Do you have an acker?
The same one.
Oh.
No one can tell us apart.
I don't need to. It's fine.
We both answer.
Ben Acker has a little bit of this type of speech pattern.
Yeah. Everybody in our cast has a Ben Acker. I don't know if they've done it for you. I'm sorry you have to find out this way.
So what have you things that you've
I wish them well.
It'll be fun to get a whole new cast in. reboot. If you listen to the Nerdist Writers Panel in order, you can pretty much trace our career. Because I'm early on asking, like, hey, if you get a meeting with a showrunner, how should you act in that meeting? And what should you say? And then it's like, if you have your first job on a show, what do you do in the writer's room?
But what an interesting, because if you know, because as the host of a show, you're essentially the lens through which the listener is
seeing.
You're seeing.
Yeah, I crossed over some sensory shit.
Oh, Chris has synesthesia.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's how you taste, Dave.
Boy, these colors sound great, guys. These colors sound great.
They smell great.
They smell so good. But... So you taking that journey as a person who ostensibly started in a position that a lot of people coming to the podcast might be in when they started, like that's a really great journey for people to take throughout that whole process. Because now you've been doing it for 3 years, maybe?
Yeah, about 3 years. I started like right before you guys opened the Nerdist showroom. I remember you had just done Thrilling, and I was like, I'm thinking about doing this thing. And we were going to do it at 826, and then 826 was selling tickets, and they forgot to put a cap on the number of tickets, and Damon Lindelof was on the first panel.
So it just blew up.
So it blew up, and you were like, I'm opening this space, and if you want to use it, that would be cool.
Is that your hard work?
Yeah. Pretty good, right?
Sometimes I can spill over into Furman a little bit. Well, like,
can I get into Mike Furman a little bit? all right, what are you going to get? All right. But that's how it came to be on the Nerdist Network, and we recorded them at Nerd Melt and all that. But I mean, it really is just like asking the questions that I want to ask, and so I learn something every time. And the biggest one is the thing that Ben and I kind of talked about from the very beginning, which we learned from doing Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is if you want to write, write all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, just do it and enjoy that process and put it out there for the world to see. Otherwise, because a script sitting in your drawer doesn't do anything for you.
Do you think there's any advantage to writing for something that's in the medium of audio only? Because you can't really rely on anything else other than the jokes and the performances, like and the vocal performances, in the way that if you know on a television show, you'd be like, and then they see this happen, and then there's this crazy prop that activates this joke. I mean, it really is about the jokes and the rhythm of the jokes when you're just writing for an audio show.
Well, I think it also forces you to be very clean about story, because there's only so much people can take in when they're listening to something, as opposed to when they're watching and listening. So stories have to be not necessarily simple, but very clear and very clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different kind of listening, like especially in the stage show. Like there's a keen attention that I think is unique to our show, but it feels to me akin to like watching a subtitled movie, where like you need to pay more attention, you need to be a little bit more invested in that with which you're interacting.
There's, yeah.
So what was there? Did thrilling? Was there ever a period of thrilling where it was dirty at all, or was it always clean?
We had in our very first episode. It was Sparks in the Bottom, Marshall on Mars. It was Beyond Belief. And in the middle, it was our Hollywood Noir segment, Tales from the Black Lagoon. And there was the line, Angela Lansbury fucked Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis? Elvis.
Yes.
And it was all about, like, making Angela Lansbury the saucy noir vixen.
Yeah, femme fatale.
And it stuck out. Like, just in the rehearsal, it stuck out. Like, this, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel earned. It doesn't feel necessary.
It felt like a real false note in the hour-long piece.
And so, yeah, there was that, and that went away, and we didn't miss it, and we haven't missed it. We talk about sometimes doing Thrilling Adventure Blue, like a late second show.
Thrilling Adventure Late Hour.
Well, we want to send Sparks Nevada, our Western hero, to Space Deadwood.
Well, yeah, but you you must have already thought this. The way around that is you just make up swears.
Exactly.
Thanks to Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, thanks to Battlestar Firefly, you can make up all the Go-Ram swears you want, you guys, right?
I tweeted something about I couldn't remember frack. I couldn't remember the word for frack.
the fake word for frack.
Right. And so I tweeted something like, what was that swear from Battlestar? Mm-hmm. And people tweeted other ones that were from the original that didn't make the new. There's some silly, convoluted, and I don't remember them. I don't have them. But if you have a computer with which you're listening to this,
then you can Google that. You may look this information up. But essentially,
it's crazy.
You can get away with. I'm really fascinated lately with this comedy mechanism of setting up a rule and then following it, because a lot of what will make people laugh is sort of that note of recognition where they're like, I know that thing, because I think there's some sort of a survival, like, safety thing. Oh, we're all part of the same tribe because I recognize your references and we're all the same. I'm safe. You're not going to kill me.
Yeah, there's comfort in it.
But you can create that within a short period of time if you set up a rule and then later on you follow it. You know, it's ultimately a callback. You know, like, you basically, it's like, oh, they're following the thing they set up. So you pretty quickly can set those swears up, and then they'll pay off throughout the
Absolutely.
Entire.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's fucking genius. That's fracking genius.
I rejected the anecdote.
Oh, okay. All
right. I realize it's not a good story.
No, you've rejected your own anecdote?
Yep.
You've just self-edited?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
You don't know. It could be a great anecdote.
You don't have to.
Well, now that we're building it up, I'm sure it's got to be amazing.
Sure, yeah, no.
And now, Ben Acker with the most amazing anecdote applicable to all things life and love.
Can we put an echo on that?
When I was born. And then cut to now.
Go on.
This is a great show. Glad to be here.
I was born. Some other stuff happened, and now I'm here.
That's actually that setting up of rules and following them is another kind of writing trick we've had to learn, technique, I guess, rather than trick. Trick seems devious.
It's at the expense of the audience.
Audience.
It's a technique at your expense.
But I feel like that's something you have to do in order to, like Ben said, Thrilling Adventure is a different kind of watching and listening experience. So you have to kind of train ears within the first 10 minutes for how to listen to the show and what are the rules of the world that you're going to be immersed in for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah. And having a live audience there is so important, because if you've just jumped on the thrilling train and you don't know, you know, you don't know who Sadie is, but then as soon as she opens her mouth and everyone erupts into applause because she's making, because she's talking about how she needs more booze than ever, then you go, oh, okay, this is a thing. Like,
yes.
The live audience serves almost as much a plot point as
absolutely
the scripted material.
Yeah, that's something that's come up a lot in, like, we've been writing comics recently. We've talked to a lot of comics writers and TV people about, like, how much the audience brings to a show and how much the reader brings to a piece, and, like, how you can't discount that. And it actually saves you doing a lot of work if you let them do some of the work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, well, you had an amazingly successful Kickstarter.
We did.
Which...
And thank you for your help on
that. Oh, no, of course, yes. Yeah. Where you ultimately were... What were all the things that you were making from the Kickstarter?
A yarn bomb.
You could just make that. Those are free.
We made a 136-page graphic novel, mm-hmm. hardcover.
Which anthology. Is available. It's available out there.
In stores and
Eisner
shops.
Nominated.
Eisner nominated.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we're so excited about it, because we are thrilled with how the... with how the final product came out. It's 10 different artists doing 10 different stories from the worlds of Thrilling Adventure.
If you win the Eisner, that you, when you go up on stage, you have to say, so Angela Lansbury fucked Elvis.
Well, that's in tone with the Eisner.
That's binding, yeah. Right? If, yeah. If you're the boss, Chris. That's fair. I guess we have to. We have to.
It'd be great if you took that seriously. I'm like, I was just kidding.
I'd,
I thought
I'd
we
like
were
to,
making
I'd like
jokes.
To think, I'd like to think Chris my parents... Angela Lansbury, Elvis.
A gasp from the room. That's, Stan Lee keels over
related.
And dies.
Oh, if we kill Stan Lee with our Eisner speech, I think it's going to really put the book on the map.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Let's go into a third printing.
That Angela Lansbury joke has just murdered the Generalissimo.
Ah, Excelsior into that good night.
True believers.
Horrible. We did a behind-the-scenes documentary web series.
By the way, if you don't ever get, if you're not ever able to get Stan Lee, I would love to come on and just do a bad Stan Lee impersonation.
That's not a bad Stan Lee impersonation.
It's just all about the intonation. Yeah. It's not so much the vocal quality,
but it's the delivery as well.
I feel like some of my impressions are like Dana Carvey impressions, where it's like, it's not really what you would call a spot on.
But those are canon.
Here's something. If you go back and listen to the Tales from the Black Lagoon Hollywood Noir trilogy, you can hear Mark Gagliardi do his impression of Dana Carvey's impression of Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, that's... Which was a little bit like that, wasn't it? Yep. It wasn't really... Got him, Mr. Potter!
But recognizable as Jimmy Stewart.
Who's been in the... Who? What?
Oh, we also did a concert film.
And we also did a concert film.
And is that available yet?
No.
Post-production, no, True Believers.
It's in post-production. We signed with a distributor, and Kickstarter backers will get their DVDs by the end of the year, we think.
Depending on how the year goes.
Depending how this year goes. If it winds up being a short year, then no. If they cancel the year in August.
So what have you learned about, I mean, essentially brand building, right? I mean, this was just started as a live, let's do a live show at a bar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then let's
as a goof with our friends.
Yeah, but then let's do this consistently. And oh, wow, it begins, you know, so I think another key here is consistency, is that, you know, you can't just do something once every 6 months and be like, I don't know what's happening. Like, you know, something has to live a lot to evolve quickly. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be aware of how that's evolving. And so when did you start to realize, oh, Thrilling is actually a thing that could be a graphic novel, but could also be a concert movie, but could also be this podcast, but could also be, you know, like a live touring show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
And shows that you could spin off as their own shows.
That was originally the impetus. Yeah. One of the reasons we started was to create, you know, we were building worlds and to put them on their feet and see what worked and what didn't, what worked mm-hmm. about them as an incubator for ideas that we could take to other media. We always say, like, Superman works great as a comic, worked as a radio play. There's 10 different movies and 10 different
TV
tones,
shows,
the TV shows. Like, it's world building, and that's, you know... We're doing the one version of it in the stage show, and we want to do all the other versions of it, and that includes mm-hmm. comics, a medium we love. So it seemed like a good first step to take. But
it was very attainable mm-hmm. in that respect. But yeah, we wrote a pilot for Beyond Belief last year, and our going to get to shoot something and hopefully it'll go. But like, yeah, part of the design was always to spin these things out into other media because storytelling is storytelling. We just love telling the story.
And the media trappings are all different. Like it's great to see. There was one of the pieces in the book, The Moonshine Holler in the graphic novel, was the only one that was based on an actual episode that we'd done as a podcast. Mm-hmm. And that was to see what changes happen. A, we thought the audience would get a kick out of it because they know that episode, they like it, and they can see something they like. But B, like what are the differences, concrete differences in storytelling? We've told this story this way, and let's transfer it to another medium and just see, you know, how many words per minute you get.
Like, sure.
We can be really wordy in the stage show because that's all it is.
Those are the only tools we have.
There's, you know, there's 5 to 6 panels a page for this many pages that were allotted to the story, and see what has to go and what's necessary to tell that story.
How does something like Beyond Belief transfer over to a visual medium? I mean, do you have to tone down some of the
banter?
Yeah.
The way we did that was writing minimal banter. Like, here's the least that you need to tell the story. And then when we do the lettering pass, which is after all the frames have been drawn, like all the art has been done, it comes back and we get to see what spaces there are left that we can put in more banter to make it feel more like the show. So we scaled it back and then built it up.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
Space permitting.
Even looking at the piece in the graphic novel, the Beyond Belief piece in the graphic novel, how bantery it feels and how much it feels like the show, even though it's probably half as many actual words as we use in the radio.
Because there is that sort of fun element of not being able to see any of it and sort of, you know, your theater of the mind stuff, which is, I'd be interested to find out, maybe there's, you know, it shows that when radio shows started porting over to television in the 50s or 40s or 50s, like what did they take away? And like, oh, we have to take this parts of this story, but then we have to leave these other parts. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Foley artist had to go into post-production.
He was on the set.
Yeah, he was on the set. He just had to go into the post-production.
Well, what was kind of interesting about the radio and early TV is they all kind of worked at the same time. And comics, too. Like, they all were working at the same time. You know, like, the Burns and Allen show was on radio and TV, they overlapped, as did Dragnet and a bunch of
what
others.
What a great
and
promotion.
The Thin Man movies were happening on the radio, like with, I think, the same actors.
Sometimes. The Hollywood studios used to do radio versions of their movies, like Bringing Up Baby, there's one, Casablanca, there's one, and sometimes with the same cast, sometimes with a different cast, but these things all existed together, and I feel like we're
Star Wars Christmas special.
There were the Star Wars radio shows, though.
Yeah, was it the Christmas special they did as a radio play? I know they did a TV version. What was the, because there was a Star Wars radio play happened, and it sort of fucked with some of the Star Wars canon.
Did it? I only remember listening to it as a kid.
I haven't heard it in, I think, since around that time, so I can't remember exactly.
Should we just download it and listen to it right now for the
rest of this podcast? Yeah, I guess we could probably just do that.
Is that an inception? Is that what you call it?
Yeah. I almost feel like you're never allowed to ask a question about anything ever again, and the answer is always, well, internet. You know, right. Like, I can never go, what is the name of, well, just look it up. You have a fucking computer in your pocket. There's no, that has eliminated the need for question marks, because you don't have to.
Yesterday I tweeted, isn't it weird that the only piece of information that is not on the internet is who directed Splash?
Oh, people must have been coming at you.
Carl Reiner.
Most.
I mean,
it's right there.
I mean, Ron Howard.
It's right there.
Multiple tweets. Yeah.
It's right there. You could just look it up.
No, I don't know. I can't find
it.
Try
IMDb. I tried it. It's not on there.
It says it doesn't know. Oh. Did a mermaid direct? Is it a merperson direct? Was that
it would only be right. Otherwise, it's exploitation.
Yeah, it's totally. It's it's
Quentin Tarantino or a merperson.
It's fish exploitation. There's no way around it. Quentin Tarantino or
totally
a merperson.
You can do it, man.
Merperson, please. Like, it's all. Just replacing.
We're getting into an ugly area.
Yeah.
But I mean, by all means, let's go to it.
Django on Fishnetted was a great...
Unhooked?
Unhooked. I'm sorry. See, this is why you're the comedy writer. And
you're just a guy who says all the comedy things. Yeah, there's your...
No, Django Unhooked was the superior joke.
Well, that's why he gets to do a polish.
Yeah, I'm a great draft twosman.
It's very important to have a polish pass.
Absolutely.
On things.
Absolutely. That's why there are two of us.
Well, that must be the...
Chris did the Eureka finger.
That must be... Aha! That must be the... That element of not being afraid to just write down the first thing that comes into your mind so that then you can go back. When Furman and I would write together, we kind of got into this really efficient place where we used to get stuck for days on like one idea or one joke. And then we go, you know what? Let's just put this in here for now. We can go back and fix it later and let's move on. We can always find something better later. And most of the time we did. And some of the times we were like, you know what? That's the best thing we could think of for that place. So it must be, you know, let's just hope it's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's such value in just getting it down and trusting yourself as a writer to figure it out.
It doesn't have to be funny till the fifth draft.
Yeah. I'm still laughing at Django Unhooked. the Mer person.
Someone better do an animation of that. I just want to see that trailer.
Well, are there things that you know, if you have to stay within Captain Laserbeam or Sparks or Beyond Belief, are there, and Amelia Earhart, are there other ones that you've wanted to try where you're like, shit, it's not thrilling. I mean, we can't sandwich this thing in because it
doesn't. There are a handful of things that aren't thrilling, that are backburnered until we have the time to do them right.
Yeah.
But
there are a handful that are thrilling that we just haven't had time to write and to work into the show.
What was the most inside joke that you ever wrote where you're like, you know what? Four people are going to get this, but we have to do it. Like, there must be Easter eggs throughout the script. Is there one?
Which is kind of amazing because, like, we work at such a pace that we kind of forget a lot of the stuff. But the fans have created a fan wiki, which is the best reference for us.
It's so helpful.
It's so helpful.
I will go back and look. Like, I would look for a character's name just to find it and then go, oh, Red Plains writer's colorblind.
Yes.
Right. Okay, we said that one time.
And it was for a joke in that episode, but it's canon now.
Yeah.
So that is by far the best thing, and they find all the Easter eggs, they find all that stuff. It's awesome.
Do you have to respect all that canon, or is it just sort of comedy?
Generally,
first?
Do. Yeah,
we try.
Yeah.
If we can. We killed a baby.
Yes. We had forgotten about that.
We wrote a pregnancy into an episode, and then in the next time we saw those characters, we had forgotten it.
Oh no.
So
that was
so,
before the fan wiki.
Well, yeah, but I learned about it from the fan wiki, and they were so like, it was nice to know the hearts of our fans, because in the conversation about it with the fan I was having on Twitter, they were like, well, just next time you see them, have them had a baby. And my thought was like, I just killed a baby. I killed a pretend baby, like in the expression about writing.
Oh, I thought of so some a couple of in jokes which are really at the smallest just for the two of us and at the most for us and the Todd Cooper who pulls our curtain is like naming a character Todd as homage to him and making him a curtain puller, or any curtain related jokes are for the three of us and the phrase work friends Ben and I cracked ourselves up I think when we were writing on Supernatural that we came up with the term, we're not really friends, we're just work friends.
I was the work best man at his wedding.
Made ourselves laugh, and it's made its way into the show a number of times. But even Work Juice, who is our fake sponsor, is the innest of in-jokes.
We wrote a not terrible, but useless Drew Carey spec start in 2099, something like that.
In 2099?
We are going to have written it in the future.
Okay.
No, in 1999, or the year 2000, the future, the noted future, we wrote a Drew Carey spec, and there was, it was a body switching episode, like you're supposed to do in all your specs.
By the way, all of this is unnecessary knowledge for this joke.
One of them was posing as the other one because they had switched bodies in order to get him into trouble.
Did Drew Carey switch bodies with Angela Lansbury so he could fuck Elvis?
That's in real life.
Oh, okay, got it.
Anyway, so the one said that they were staying up late, staying late in the office, licking the work juice off of phones, and it was just the grossest weird thing. Meanwhile, we had written a pilot about a coffee shop, and we couldn't come up with a good name for a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. Ground Zero is as close as it came, and then 9/11 happened.
Shut that down.
Yeah. Right.
And, the terrorists win again.
Right. We can't have fake coffee shops anymore.
God, boy, that just they covered all the bases.
But anyway, work juice, I think, was the punchline.
Yeah, I think I called coffee work juice at one time when we were meeting, and you laughed, and I was like, oh, this is going to stick. And then it just became this thing. It became a word for coffee for us.
So what are all the things that you guys have written on? I mean,
besides Thrilling Adventure.
Besides Thrilling Adventure, obviously, I think people would be delighted to know that you worked on Supernatural, because I think a lot of people... I've had Supernatural folks on the podcast
with the great Ben Edlund. We wrote,
I've known Eric Kripke for
he's great
for decades. I mean, I knew Eric Kripke when we were all right out of college. Kripke was an AD on this other guy that I met, basically, to raise all this money right out of USC film school to make this fake 80s comedy in the mid 90s.
Awesome.
It's sort of in the vein of like Hot Dog the movie, mm-hmm. and all these. So it was making fun of paying homage to those films. Mm-hmm. And Kripke was the first AD on that. I've known him for forever.
Wow.
And so it's so mind blowing to me that he's now created like one of the biggest sci-fi shows in the history of sci-fi television.
Like 10 years now, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
So you guys worked on Supernatural.
We worked on Supernatural on season 7, which was a blast. Mostly, as Ben said, because we got to work with Ben Edlund, who is, you know, created The Tick,
mm-hmm.
and he worked on like Angel, you know? And he's been around, and Firefly. It was amazing to watch him work.
And all the people over there were great.
Yeah, they really were. It was a great group of writers.
The group of writers were, like, it was really nice.
Did you just watch him type?
No, they watched us type.
We would have if we could have.
It was neat. We worked at the same time on Super Ninjas.
Mm-hmm.
We did a freelance episode of a Nickelodeon show that was totally Adam West Batman for kids.
Yeah,
awesome.
It was really fun.
And we went to the set of that once when they were shooting our episode. And there were two sides to go on. One where they did the teen bits, and the other where they were ninjas, and it was just all stuntmen and a Matrix coordinator.
Darth Maul and Rape Hart
was the villain in the episode.
Yeah.
So it was amazing because it was just a whole room devoted to this giant kung fu fight that was all pros. And so
amazing.
Like just watching them do this thing in this room, and they were like, now we want to show you the kids. We have seen kids before. We want to watch these people punch each other over things.
These guys are like swinging from overhead lights and crashing chairs over each other. It was
How
so
did you
cool.
guys meet?
The two of us?
Yeah.
Oh. We met at Syracuse University, where we both attended school.
My cousin, my mother's cousin's son, so once removed or whatever, was his best friend in high school.
Yeah, but we didn't know each other then. But
I was shortcutting that meeting story.
But in that idiot who was my best friend in high school never said, hey, my good friend Ben Blacker, I have a cousin named Ben Acker.
No, that is weird.
Isn't
hey,
that
ben,
crazy?
Ben Acker, you know what is strange? My friend is named Ben Blacker.
Never said anything.
The only person to refrain from pointing out our
exactly.
name similarities could have introduced
what's
us.
What's amazing is that your names together sound like a radio show writing team that then went to work on Jack Benny or your show of shows. Like, we got to get Acker and Blacker in here. Those guys will fix up any script.
Bring in the Bens.
Yeah, bring in the Bens. Bring in the Bens.
We wish it still worked that way.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Well, we used to lose jobs all the time because they were like, someone will hire you with those names.
What?
Why don't you do it?
Why don't you show them how it's done?
No. Not us. Not The Simpsons, thank you.
It's too weird. I think you're... I feel like The Simpsons would be a very hard job because there's no there. I mean, talk about. I mean, they essentially. I think they've just had to abandon canon at this point because they're just out of
large. They rejigger the pasts every 10 years.
They have to.
Here's how to fix it. Hmm. I'll just for free fix The Simpsons by for better or worsing it. Let them grow up.
Oh,
spend the next 10 years that way.
Yeah,
you get That'd be amazing.
But I don't know if they'll be doing that show for another 10 years.
I think they should.
You really think
with this brilliant idea?
Yeah, I mean, because when you go back in the earlier episodes when they would do the flashback episodes, it was like when Homer and Marge, because Homer is
in the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the 70s, and then when Bart was born, it was like a young Joe Piscopo taught us how to laugh. It was like all the like Bart and Lisa should theoretically be in about 30.
Yes. Yeah. Now they would have been born in like 2005.
Yeah, exactly. Now they would have like they're
crazy.
Because they just basically had to slide. It's funny to see them with iPhones, you know, like.
But it's like, I mean, those writers are so sharp and so savvy that they're doing basically what comic books did. Like, they're doing what Spider-Man did in, you know...
It does freak me out, though.
Selective continuity.
I started watching The Simpsons when I was a kid, and now... And Homer is 38 on the show, which is fucking crazy.
So you were Bart, and now you're Homer. Sunrise,
soon
sunset.
Soon you'll be Grandpa.
Well, your middle is crusty before your grandpa.
Isn't that the journey we all make?
Yeah, from the Riddle of the Sphinx.
Yes.
What's Bart in the morning?
You middle is crusty. That's fucking amazing.
Not
before inaccurate. before you get to Abe Simpson. Oh my god. Yeah, that. But having to keep up with. I mean, there's just, I don't know. There's just no more story. I mean, any more stories to tell?
They get new writers, and those guys.
Marge
have
gets a new coat.
Sequels to the first 25 years of stories.
Oh man, another Springfield Film Festival.
Exactly. You know what?
It's digital now or something.
But the Simpsons movie was after like 20 years, right?
And yeah, they saved up some stuff. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it really was.
Like,
it really
like
was.
they could do another one of those.
That was fun because they got to. They finally, you know. Like, they got to swear a little bit.
Yes. Nudity.
Bart's dog was in the opening,
was
which
so
was a little
ridiculous.
Off-putting. But,
I love that they just went for it on everything for that movie.
Showing, I mean, because, you know, that show was incredibly cutting edge at one point. Like, there was nothing else like that on television in the early 90s. Yeah.
They still probably show the best... just group mentality, groupthink thing, or they did in those episodes. Just when the town would have an opinion on something.
Yes,
yes,
it was always my favorite stuff.
Is that what's your sort of ultimate? Obviously, I mean, it'd be fun to create something and then have that be a show. But if you could, are there shows that you'd be like, fuck, it'd be really great to?
Yeah, we sat in we had a meeting with FX one time where they asked what show we'd want to work on there. On their air, and we just chanted Justified, pumping our fist in the air for like 17 minutes.
Justified.
Just Justified, Archer.
Justified does everything that we want to do in TV, where like there are these sprawling stories, but there are very small moments. There's
character. Yeah, it all comes from character.
Everything comes from
so
character.
So you're not necessarily motivated by comedy, even though you're...
No. I mean, we love comedy, and like Parks and Rec does the same thing. We love Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec and Justified, same show.
Same exact show? Different sides of the coin.
Yeah.
Like the tertiary characters could be spun off into their own shows. That's how strong they are, and that's how strong their points of view are in both of those shows. And that's the thing we respond to.
Yeah.
So what types of shows are you pitching when you're pitching shows?
We've pitched all types. We've sold hour long pilots. We've sold half hour pilots. We've sold animated half hours. Like everything.
Sketch. We sold a sketch show. We had a guy from Fox came to Thrilling Adventure back in the day, and they were looking to find something to replace Mad TV. Mm-hmm. And he said, I think you guys are too smart for Fox. And we're like, no, trust me, we are not. And then they got a sketch packet from us, and we included an NPR theme park.
There you go.
Part of the thing. Because we thought, like, making fun of NPR, like... having fun with that.
That'll show how stupid we are.
Right, we are dumb. Like, and our reps at the time said, are you including an NPR sketch to the people who thought you were too smart? And
what is it, theme park?
But see, look, we're dumb. We're doing it.
Is that where...
Was it called NPark?
NPR World.
NPR World. And we had the idea of... actors walking around with characters,
big foam,
like
Eric
big
Glass
foam
head.
Characters. But it was that where Rizdoll and the Hizdoll came from?
Yeah, a t-shirt you could buy.
Killed us.
Yeah.
There was one other really great joke in that. I forget what it was. Mm-hmm. Some name of a roller coaster or something like that.
Have you ever thought about doing, like at Meltdown, just having people come on and just read pilots that never got sold?
We really should.
We've talked about doing that. Yeah. I think somebody does that show. Like a failure show or something.
Because I'd talked to Paul Feig a couple times about doing his episode of Alf.
I listened to that on the episode that you guys did, and I thought, oh my god, I have to get in touch with Chris because I want to make that happen.
Yeah,
yeah, it'd be fun to do a recurring show where it'd probably have to be a monthly show because it'd be a little bit of a production, but
that'd be so much.
But like staged readings of failed pilots.
Staged readings of failed pilots, like where you have the writer, have the writer come in, the showrunner, and go like, you know, I pitched this to CBS, and you know, they said this or this or this, and this is why it didn't go, but
But here it is. And even they should even be comfortable if they're also terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whether or not they're really great or really terrible.
And invite development executives.
And, okay, no. You're reaching too hard for the grail and you got to let it go. You have to.
Listen, Thrilling Adventure Hour is a full-time job. We couldn't possibly have another. That is not
Shut
true.
Your dumb face. Shut it up. Shut it off. Shut all this off.
We just make millions from it.
No faces, etc.
Shut these faces off.
Shut it down.
Was the question, what have we written on? Because we also wrote some comic books.
We wrote some comic books. We're writing Thunderbolts for Marvel right now, and we're writing on the Puss in Boots DreamWorks series for Netflix, which will air sometime.
And some of us are writing for Wits, the NPR show.
Nice. Mm. And then, so Thrilling is, there's no breaks. You're still every month.
Still every month. We take every July off to go do Comic-Con.
Right.
But we've been doing, like, crazy touring shows. For the past 3-4 months, we've been kind of doing 2 shows a month, one here in L.A. and one on the road. We did Seattle. We just got back from Chicago.
It's a tough show to tour, though, because it's just, the economics of touring is very, you know, when people go, why are ticket prices? They're like, well, because...
There's 100 people in the cast.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but, you know, the size of the vet, like the venue has to be a certain size and quality to handle
absolutely
what you guys are doing. And then the better the venue, the more expensive that becomes. And so you have to taking all of the production costs, like the talent travel costs and lodging costs out of the equation. It's just to turn the lights on and put on this show, you know, it's like $14,000 or some sort of crazy number that you have to hit.
Yeah. And we've been kind of teaming up with conventions that are going on. So we did Emerald City and we just did C2E2.
Yeah.
And that's really helped because part of the thing with touring Thrilling, besides the size of it, is, you know, we have a great, big, huge... we have a great audience. But it's not like we're not a name brand. You know, so we have to kind of stack the deck a little bit and bring some celebrity names. I mean, we invited you to Seattle, I believe.
Yes.
You were busy, but we got some names to come with us. And we did that just now in Chicago. So that kind of sweetens the deal for a lot of people.
Well, you also sort of figured the same thing that we figured with podcasts, which is, you know, rather than trying to find a bunch of people in a city that happen to like the show to all come out on one night. Let's just set it up near where these people will be gathering because it just is more efficient. It's just easier that way.
Absolutely.
Because no matter how much you promote a show, if there's no other event around it and you don't really have the budget to do a ton of media media coverage, you'll still promote the shit out of it and then you'll leave and then someone will be like, hey, when are you going to be in Chicago? And you're like, there.
Which we actually got.
I talked about it for weeks.
But the cons are really fun too, because like Ben and I, we love stuff. We are fans of stuff, so we love doing these cons anyway. And I think we tend to make a lot of new fans at cons because we give our cast is charming and hilarious, and they give good panel. We had one girl at this Chicago con.
She'll be pleased that you're talking about her.
I hope she listens to this. Who, during the Q&A portion of the Thrilling Adventure Hour panel, got up. She was like the 5th or 6th in line, and she said, I don't really know what this is.
I came because of Molly.
I came because of Molly. Molly Quinn was with us, and Tim Amundsen, she knew. She was like, I know you guys, but this seems to be some sort of radio play. We're like, oh yeah, at the beginning of these panels, we should probably say what the show is. That is a good lesson. Thank you.
Just so people, because sometimes...
But she really put it together.
She really did.
Context
and
clues were awesome.
She tweeted at us to say, hey, I've checked out the show. I really like it. And it was very sweet.
Yeah.
It was cute.
Yeah, because sometimes when you're doing panels, people can be squatting for other panels. And so
we don't allow that.
But, whoa.
Yeah, Ben clears the room.
Oh, he does. Just
you don't have to go home. I probably can't go home.
Some of the guests, you know, who are some of the guests that you've had that you...
We feel.
Of course.
And, like, everybody in the cast, ourselves included, the first time he did the show turned into our 13-year-old selves.
Whatever age you were when you first heard Weird Al, that's who you become around Weird Al. He did not have this story, but it would not be out of the question for him to have this story. hey, you know when you go to a bank and everyone smiles at you and elbows each other and points at you and they're glad to see you? And sometimes the pens don't work. Like, everybody is glad to see Weird Al every place he goes.
And he's as nice and talented as you want him to
be. He's wonderful. He is a wonderful man. And we had just become friends around 2009. And Rob Zombie was shooting the sequel to the Halloween, to his Halloween franchise. And... and he called me and he said, okay, so Loomis's character has kind of gone off the deep end and he's sort of bought into his own shit and he's kind of reached a point where he's buying his own hype. And so he goes on a talk show and I want you to host the talk show, but who would be another amazing person to sit him in between to ridicule him? And I go, well, I've just become friends with Weird Al. And he was like, you have to call Weird Al. So I call Weird Al on like a Friday and I said, do you want to go to Atlanta on Sunday and shoot a Halloween movie with Rob Zombie and Malcolm McDowell? And he was like, sure.
Yeah.
And so
I was going to do it anyway.
So we traveled together. So we fucking traveled together. Wow. We flew to Atlanta together. And going to the airport with Weird Al, it's just like this sea of heads. Like, but one like TSA guy was like, oh shit, Kenny G. Like, which I thought was amazing.
Awesome.
Which I thought was amazing.
What is his luggage like?
It's regular luggage.
Mostly accordion cases. I will never forget, and this is one of my favorite things about living in Hollywood and being part of the Nerdist family, was there was some Nerdist party, and Weird Al was talking to Rob Zombie, and they both look exactly how you think they look.
Yep.
And I just looked over like, oh, I like it here. This is awesome. This doesn't happen anywhere else.
I know. That was the same party where, like, Bill Nye showed up.
Yes.
And it
started throwing fists.
Just fucking beat the shit out of everyone. Science, motherfuckers. Here's the Newtonian law. And then he would deliver a punch to the face.
A Nygram, he calls it.
Bill Nunch, science punch.
But yeah, Weird Al is still the big one. You know, we love comedy.
Wait for it. I'll take this opportunity to apologize. I'm sorry I told you to shut your faces
off.
Thank
you. I appreciate it.
What? Yeah. What?
Oh, that's... I didn't mean it.
It's
keep
important.
Your faces.
Want to give us an apology cookie?
Yeah, take one of those.
They're from everybody, both. We're a team. Eat of the apology cookie.
Right? It's Passover.
I would love
right?
to... somewhere... No, you're just applying the somewhere it's 5 o'clock so people can start drinking to Passover.
Yeah.
But it's totally not accurate. It's Passover. I mean, I guess if you're
talking... It's always Passover.
Okay, so. If you're talking about alternate universes...
Yep.
Not in some right. universes, it's always... It's always Passover in some universe.
In that Passover universe.
Yeah, where it's all Passover.
Talk
all
about
the time.
A Jew-run universe.
I mean, seriously. They control the media and the government and...
Time and space.
All time and space in that universe and all the planets.
Enjoy every matzo.
Yeah, they do. I'd love to be in a writer's room. I would love to be a part of your writing process. Is it fun or are you guys intense?
No, we are. It's,
we're
it's
super
fun.
Fucking intense.
It's fun tense?
No, it's fun. For me, it's the most fun part of doing thrilling and really all the writing we do is when Ben and I sit down to break a story.
Yeah.
Because it's the discovery process and like we'll both have dumb ideas and we'll both have smart ideas and it's fun sifting through.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
But yeah, come join our writer's room. We're so game.
It's it's at a coffee shop near you.
Great.
We actually we've had guest writers a bunch in the past couple of years, mostly for holiday shows of thrilling, like Len Wein and Ed Brubaker and Doug Petrie, Glenn David Gold. It's been
those
awesome.
Are real writers though.
They're real writers.
Yeah.
But like we are always hitting up Paul to come because we love comedians. Mm-hmm. You guys have great ideas. To be like, come sit in on this thing, and you guys I never have time. But come sit in on.
I would love to.
Yeah, we'll totally do it. It'd be a blast.
Just do it after this.
Just write a thrilling.
Yeah,
I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
We can. Yeah, it may not be on tomorrow. We do it tonight too. You're fucking crazy.
I don't need to tell you how to live your life. But when's the last time you had a Ferris Bueller vacation from one writing thing to come do another writing thing?
You have like Friday at 5 a.m. off, right?
Yeah, I do. I do. So I can come by.
Perfect.
I'll take a Ferris Bueller vacation, and then
from
the three of us will just get in your dad's Ferrari. And
you should see Acker's dad's Ferrari. It's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And nice.
Yeah. And he doesn't keep it in a big glass thing, so he can't.
Yeah, he's more smarter than that.
Yeah, he's smarter than that. No,
he's one or two smarter than that.
Essentially, Cameron Fry lived in the trees. They were Ewoks. I think they were rich Ewoks.
There was a crazy ramp down from the tree that you could take the car.
Yeah, I don't know why they were. They were some sort of weird. It was like
they were Jetson fans.
That's what it was. Or Flash Gordon. Like there was a tree. They were the tree people who had to do the ritual.
Yes.
Yeah. Where they'd stick their arm in the log. That I still strangely have nightmares about. Something about that scene always freaked me out.
When you see that stuff as a kid, it will fuck you up forever.
The Large Marge thing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That is the name in my head for that trope.
Mm-hmm. Is there any more perfect movie than Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Oh, and any worse commentary track.
Oh, what, really?
The commentary track is Tim Burton and Pee-wee Herman, or Paul Rubens, I'm not sure. I think it's Paul Rubens, not Pee-wee Herman.
I'm not sure.
But they are just sitting there watching the movie, and Tim Burton will go, remember when we did this?
Yeah.
And Paul Rubens will go, yep. And then Tim Burton is like, this one was like a Western. And yep.
And then they like. Now, to me, that sounds pretty great. Because you really want them talking over the whole movie?
You've already seen the movie.
Yeah,
you
know
because then it's like you're watching it with them. It's almost like you're watching them sitting in the row behind them, but instead of going, shh, excuse me, please, you're like, that's fucking Tim Burton and Paul Rubens.
I actually shushed the commentary track.
Shh, guys, please.
A little respect for your movie.
Come on, guys. Come on. You've seen this.
But they added no like anecdotes. It was just like, this is that scene with the car in it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love a commentary track, and all of Tim Burton's are like that. They're so boring, and you want them to be so awesome.
The commentary track feels like Hurst and his wife just sitting there with a newspaper.
You know what would be a lot of fun is, I mean, this isn't, I don't think this dips too much into MST waters, but if we were to take an old movie and basically do the commentary track as though we made the film, and just come up with a bunch of, that. You know, so that it's not, like the Mystery Science Theater model is just a bunch of disconnected jokes, but this would be...
I had this thought recently, which was, like, as they try and sell you Star Wars every couple of years on new Blu-ray, DVD, like, the only way I would buy a new version of Star Wars is if there was a commentary track of you and Patton talking about it while you're watching.
Well, that was like the Spaced ones were so great. When the Spaced DVDs came out, they had commentary tracks with Patton, with Quentin Tarantino.
Diablo Cody.
Was Diablo Cody one? But they were really cool because they were fans of the show.
They were just talking about
the show.
That's a great idea.
Really, with Edgar Wright. And
so these are two slightly different ideas, but both totally workable.
Yes, but I like the fake commentary track.
Because then that way, then you can actually cast, then you can get the Paul Tompkins of the world to play characters really like, when I directed it, and then just make it as ridiculous as possible.
We did one of our Kickstarter rewards was Paul offered to do commentary tracks in character.
As Werner Herzog? Right?
He had three of them. He had Cake Boss, he had Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Werner Herzog. And the person who bought the reward could pick the movie, and Paul would record the commentary track in character as one of those guys. And I have not heard them, but I understand they are hilarious.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. Like, I would buy that reward.
Did he, one of his stand-up specials, I think he did the Spanish language track. That if you adjust it to SAP, it's him saying everything with an accent.
That's brilliant.
He is truly the best of us.
Oh, my God.
Paul Tompkins is, without a doubt, his comedy brain is, I mean, I'm not jealous of it in a negative way, but I'm just jealous of it in a, holy shit, what an amazing...
Yeah. You just marvel at his
where he's able to pull from.
Yeah.
It's just a much wider universe than us mere mortals.
Also, he's a nice guy or whatever.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
He's all talented and nice. What'd you say? Oh, I thought you said...
God rest his soul.
I thought you said go Ram. I thought you were doing a callback to our swears.
Go Ram that guy.
Go Ram that guy. Go Ram that fragging frag.
I wish I knew all of the... What was it? Chinese? Japanese swears?
Dirtanese?
I don't know what it was.
No.
What?
I thought that's where you were going with that. I'm sorry. I thought you were going with a bad, semi-racist child.
I don't know your American.
Chris, open the fridge.
What?
Would you open the fridge?
Sure.
Would you get a Coke?
Sure.
Open that Coke.
Oh. Hey!
No, just open it.
Okay. What happened? It tastes weird.
Yeah, no, that's it. I just wanted you to have a nice cold
Okay,
Coke.
Good. Well,
this is sponsored by Coca-Cola, right? Everybody open your fridge and have a nice cold Coke. That's their slogan.
Yeah.
Right?
they were smart. Yeah. Which they are. Our sponsors are brilliant.
Yeah. Right. Buy a Coca-Cola.
Someone's going to have to make work juice at some point.
It's made.
I'm glad you asked. I know you didn't really ask.
Well, that's all the time we have.
We were working with this guy who is designing a lot of our merch, and he got a actual coffee roaster in Nebraska, mm-hmm. I think.
They sent us samples to try the different
yes.
blends, and we decided which one was the work juice. And true to our fake slogan, it actually is the most caffeine-dense legally available on the marketplace.
It's great coffee, but you do not need a lot of it.
It actually is that thing that we thought, that's a thing to say.
That's fantastic.
So what else, you guys? Do you want to promote anything else while you're here?
Let's promote. May 10th is our big show. Big New York. We're going to Town Hall in New York. We are pulling out all the stops.
Putting in new stops, taking them out,
yes.
pulling them right out.
So can we expect any stops?
We'll see. It may be a stop for sure.
There will be one stop at the end.
Okay. What are you going to be planning on pulling that out at any time?
No, we're just going to end the show at a certain point.
Oh, okay. Before the stop has to be pulled out.
No, right then.
Some stops are too difficult to pull out.
So how will we promote this show? Who's in it,
Benjamin?
Most of
the Work Juice players will be there. Paul, Padgett Brewster, Busy Phillips, Mark Evan Jackson. Almost the whole cast will be there. And then our New York crew, John Hodgman, Jonathan Colton, Ira Glass.
What?
Yeah, ridiculous.
And he will be playing something just as dumb this time as he played
yeah,
last time.
He played an evil elf last time.
Pitch him NPR World.
Yes.
He will steal it.
That's true.
He'll open up that theme park.
And then we got Scott Aukerman, Zachary Levi, and Dick Cavett to come do this show.
Awesome.
Plus even more people like Paul and Storm, Terry Kinney. It's going to be a crazy fun show. And thrillingadventurehour.com for tickets to that and all links to all of our upcoming shows.
And podcasts. And
oh, and else. Depending when this comes out, either the Backstage web series will be on Nerdist.com
yes.
or it will have just been on Nerdist.com.
Yes.
And it'll be every week for, I think,
we had you guys make a little bit of footage backstage at some of the shows just mm-hmm. to sort of, just to give people a little glimpse
yes.
of our Kickstarter.
Behind the curtain.
But it's beautiful. Everybody
yeah.
did an awesome job. I'm so excited about it. It makes me love the show as if I'm not part of it.
Yeah.
Which is what we wanted. So I think people will dig it.
Y'all motherfucking merpersons know how to be twee as fuck.
Twee as fuck.
Twee as fuck.
Right.
Enjoy your yarn burrito. So, serving a burrito in yarn,
oh.
in a crocheted pouch.
That's mm-hmm. the tweeest as fuckest thing you can do.
And it's also a bow tie.
come to Taco Uke.
Nice.
Make a run for the butter.
Just trying to do All right, that's the end.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Benz.
Sorry, Chris.
Sorry, I ruined your podcast.
Who's talking now?
I can't even tell.
Who's... Blacker as fuck.
Make the t-shirts.
I'll buy a blacker as fuck t-shirt. Are we still recording?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I would do it.
Then I won't. Good work, Katie. Good job, Katie.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.